Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I am Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Today, we're talking to a student playwright about his participation in the Playworks program. But first, let's do some Theater Folk news. So this podcast is going up the last week of November, which means that December is right around the corner. December is one of our quietest months. It makes sense, you know, schools are winding down, fall productions are over. And what usually happens in December is that Craig and I, we take a little break. We don't do a daily blog. Sometimes we go on vacation. It's really lovely to always know that December is going to be quiet so we can make plans if we want. Now, having said all that, and this is the reason that this is Theater Folk News, is that yes, usually things are quiet here at Global Headquarters, except when it comes to our podcast. That's right, TFP is rolling right along, and there will be podcast episodes into December. We won't take a break until it's closer to Christmas. There are still three upcoming podcasts in December, one of which is going to be a YouTube fireside chat on Les Mis. Can't wait to do that. Lastly, where oh where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on the Stitcher app, and you can also subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search on the word Theater Folk. Episode 19, Playworks Program. So I was recently at the Arizona Thespian Festival, where I participated in the Playworks Program as a director and a playwright mentor. So Playworks is a fabulous, fabulous opportunity for student playwrights. Students, they submit a short play, and then a couple are chosen. In Arizona, it was three. And those three plays get one-on-one feedback. They get some development with a professional playwright, and then they get to see their play go up in a heightened staged reading. So it's on its feet. We had a whole day to rehearse. So it's not just a cold reading, it's a very warm reading with action. And for my playwright, Aaron, this was going to be the first time that he would have seen his first play, in front of an audience. So let's hear what Aaron has to say about participating in Playworks. Hello, I'm here at Arizona Thespians, and I'm here with...
Aaron Cargyle.
Awesome, Aaron. And you are a participant in the Playworks program.
Yes, I am.
And Playworks is it's a pretty interesting program, eh?
It is very interesting.
What happens is, I guess it's student playwrights from all over your state in Arizona.
Yep.
Can submit a, how long does the play have to be?
Six pages.
Six-page play. And they choose three. Mm-hmm. To go up at festival. And basically it's, you get feedback, and then we gather on the Friday, had auditions, you got some more feedback, you did a pretty substantial rewrite, you met with a director, playwright mentor, which happens to be me, for your play, and then in just over an hour, the three plays are going up.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's very similar kind of, from what I've seen, to a 48-hour film contest.
Sure.
In the way it's just really rapid fire in it.
It's very intense, isn't it?
It's very intense. There's no room for stopping. Thankfully, my play is very straightforward.
So let's talk about your play. So your play is called what?
All's Well That Pays Well.
And what made you write it?
Basically, you see it a lot. It's this whole story of like a ghost who comes back and helps someone who's alive. You see it in countless movies and plays.
The main character in your play is suffering from writer's
block. Yes, he is a teenage playwright. He is writing a class one act. His deadline's in 6 hours. They're going to take this one act to a really prestigious festival. It's going to be the life or death of the theater department. Really big event. And he's not very talented when it comes to writing. And he's got a really bad case of writer's block. So basically, the ghost of William Shakespeare approaches him.
And seems helpful.
Yeah, he seems very helpful, but his advice is not quite what the young playwright expects.
Right. How long did it take you to write it?
It's been about a couple months. I would say no more than a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, and now I know this wasn't your first, this wasn't when you were going to do something for Playworks, this wasn't your first idea, right? You had something that was a bit longer.
Yeah, it was a bit longer. It was really good. I really liked that, and I want to use it for something at some point, but it just didn't really fit this very well. And after having the idea, I realized it really kind of fit the Thespian Conference theme. You know, Shakespeare is obviously, a synonym for theater. So,
and why did you want to enter this contest?
I've always enjoyed writing. I've always enjoyed creating, whether it's music or film or anything.
Is this your first play, or have you written before?
I have written skits, and I've kind of dabbled in it, but this was my first serious effort, too. But it's not the first time I've written. I've been writing for a long time.
But as a play from sort of like one that has a beginning, middle, and end, and characters?
More than
a sketch, anyway.
Yeah, I don't remember there being any others. I think this is the first big one.
Right, and once you found out that you were one of the three, what kind of feedback did you get?
So when I realized, it was on Halloween when I found out, soon after I got an email from the guy who's running Playworks. He basically told me to incorporate more Shakespeare quotes and cliches, which is interesting because he said that's not the advice he usually gives. You know, the advice is usually get rid of cliches, get rid of things people expect to see. And I went through that, added some quotes, and then he wanted more action. So I involved an interesting fight scene. It's been pulled off really well throughout production.
Considering we only had about 3 hours to put the whole thing up, so... And then what was your response? Because then what happened yesterday is we got together and we heard there was sort of a cold reading of the three scripts. And what was your initial reaction when you heard your script read aloud?
I had heard it read aloud before, kind of, not like all together, but I approached my actors who were going to read it and... I'd heard him read stuff, and I thought it was pretty good. For me, the moment when it kind of, not necessarily weird in a bad way, but when it started kind of a little surreal was when the auditioners were reading it, because these were people who I didn't know who were giving it interpretations I hadn't thought of, and it was really kind of surreal to see something which you wrote being read by people you don't know.
Right.
And the jokes were actually funny. Even to me.
Well, what I told you yesterday was all the auditioners were basically reading the same scene. Mm-hmm. So we heard the same joke about 12 times.
Yeah.
And it made me laugh every time. And I said, that's when you know you've got something that works, because it's funny over and over and over. And then you have to think about it, too, when an audience is looking at your play. They're only ever seeing it once.
Yeah.
So it's even better if you can get that something that works in repeat than when it does in...
The best jokes that I've noticed are the ones that you can think back on, weeks or months later and still laugh, at...
Well, we had this conversation yesterday, too, about what's entertaining and what's fluffy and what's not, and that you can still have something that's entertaining that resonates a week or 2 weeks later, and then that's the real... that's what we should be doing, instead of writing things that just disappear from your head.
Well, yeah, because you see a lot of... There's a songwriter who refers to... He talked about pop music this way. He refers to it as refrigerator buzz. And I have to agree with that. That's a lot of forms of art. It's not... It's kind of in the background. It just kind of is buzz. It might as well not be there. You unfortunately see that a lot in, movies. You see it a lot in plays and music. But they're the ones that really resonate, Those are the ones that you keep going back to, not necessarily just the temporary ones that are, cliche or...
Yeah.
Not
well,
very good.
That are like ice cream, it melts and it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's a real, as I said, I think it's harder to write a good comedy than it is to write a drama, because I think it's really easy to go to the, oh, you know, oh, woe is me, but to make people laugh is...
Yeah, and I think it depends on what kind of comedy you're trying to do. Because, you know, obviously comedy, like any art form, is there's many different styles of it. And I think people's strengths are in different areas.
Well, it's really interesting you say that, because I think that your play works both ends of the spectrum. You're dealing with the verbal comedy, just like in playing with those verbal the cliches of Shakespeare, and just the banter between the two characters. But then also, it was really important to you to have that physical comedy, to have that fight, and you fought for that. You fought to keep the fight in. And
yeah, because the original draft didn't have a fight, and when I put it in there, I really liked it because it made it even more absurd, and I actually was really, really very pleasantly surprised, very excited that the play is a lot more physical than I thought it was going to be. When I originally wrote it, I basically imagined it was going to be two guys occasionally standing up and just, you know, talking to each other and nothing, you know, horribly interesting physically. But it's really very physical, and it's, you know, it's not all slapstick, but I think it's a really good balance of physical and
It does have a really good balance. What's it like? Because you've done it a couple times, one with the, you know, really thinking you wanted to keep that fight in. And then also today when we were rehearsal, you wanted, there was a joke that you wanted played with a different tone. We were trying to get it to go up and up and up and escalate. And you were like, I want the pause before and after. So you stood up for yourself,
yeah,
which I love. And how did that feel? How did that feel to go, okay, I really would like it this way?
Yeah, see, for most things, like minor interpretations that aren't exactly what I thought. I mean, I don't like people who are like Nazis about that sort of thing.
Right.
It's really obnoxious. So for the most part, I was just like, it's great. But something about it just seemed like it was kind of rushed.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if I were watching something, I think the laughter will be more. Because it rushes so fast that you really don't, I feel like I didn't really, I mean, I knew what it was going to be. Because, you know, I had written it, obviously.
Right.
But I didn't really feel like he was going to be caught as well as if there was a pause for emphasis on it. And that just, I don't know, I didn't, like, read a book or something that told me that. It's just kind of what I thought.
No, it's just your instinct, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I have to say, I don't think you can, there's some things you can't really learn from books. And I think instinct and is really one of them. And I think it's really important because a lot of... particularly writers just starting out, they can get really bombarded and sort of pushed in one way to change another. And that's why, because when Dwayne was, he got a lot of different, oh, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this. And at some point it's like, you know, there's a difference between offering an opinion about a play and saying you should change and do it this way.
Well, yeah, because... everybody who's creative or, you know, does things that are creatively, like write or paint or anything, everybody kind of has a different idea of how to do things. And that's what's really so great about creativity. And sometimes, like, what my idea for his play might have been in his original vision, which is the most important, obviously, because it's his play, might contrast. But it's good to hear, for me at least, to hear alternating opinions. Like, my original play, not this one, but the other one. There's this guy I know. He's very... I knew that he would give me a criticism of my play that might have been too harsh, but I went to him anyway because I wanted to hear what he had to say. And, he's a nice guy and everything, but like, I knew that he was going to give me a really harsh criticism. Not a mean criticism, but like a very...
straight up.
Very straight up. And I liked it because even though I didn't agree with everything that he was saying, I just wanted a different view on it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really important. You can't send a play out into the world not... you know, the play is going to be viewed by, you know, the best case scenario by, you know, hundreds, thousands of people. And all of those people have differing opinions. And if you only know your own opinion, then you're not putting the play...
well, and you don't want to put out messages that you don't want your play to be associated with. Because, you know, obviously mine, in this case, was a very straightforward piece. You know, there's really no way I think you can misinterpret it.
I think it's very, very clearly laid out.
Very clearly laid out. But, you know, you have some plays which you wouldn't want to only have one opinion on it. And you might be making a play talking about how horrible something like, let's say, racism is. But then the way you present it is off. And so when people see it, they think it supports racism.
Right. And if you hadn't got that...
you know, and then people think you're a horrible person. And they, you know, might not... appreciate the work for how much it's worth.
So how do you handle criticism when it comes your way for your artistic stuff?
For my artistic stuff, usually people I ask, they give me like an honest, not like a, you know, constructive criticism. They don't give me like, you know,
oh, that was horrible. Go do math.
But I usually take it, it kind of just depends to me, it kind of depends on the person, and it kind of depends on what I have in mind. Like, it, like if they give me a suggestion which just I liked, but I totally think would not work for the play. Like, you know, sometimes people will give me, you know, comedy suggestions or something, which are like, sometimes I'll think, wow, that's great. I have to put this into my play. And then there's somewhere I'm like, as funny as that is, it's going to...
derail.
It's going to derail. Like, I remember I was telling somebody about the thumb biting scene, which was a discussion with somebody else resulted in that idea. But I was talking with somebody like, well, what if they bit his thumb off? Because there's a scene where a character bites another character's thumb. And I'm like, in certain comedies, if done right, that would have been hilarious, but would have completely derailed what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
Because you can't have a... Because there's like a straight dialogue scene right after, and it's hard to deliver straight dialogue with
With the guy with no thumb.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure. So you're nervous?
A little bit. I am very confident in my actors and in the way it's done. I have no worries about the play. I'm just kind of... I'm interested in seeing what the reception is. I mean... There's that part of me which is concerned because I believe there is one winner chosen out of the three, correct?
Is there? I don't remember.
I think so. I remember last year there was.
Okay.
But, I mean, the part of me is like, yeah, I want to win. But I think to a certain extent I already have won in many ways.
So.
Because even if I don't win, which is, you know, obviously perfectly fine, I've seen one of my own works produced. I had the chance to come out here and do this. Only three out of, I want to say, 14 people got it. And I was lucky.
It was more than that. It was 20.
And I was lucky enough to, you know, get a spot in that. So I feel like, you know, worst case scenario, I've already got the wonderful finished product.
And you've had this experience of what it's like to get a script, get feedback, make those revisions, but still, you know, thinking about staying true to your vision and have people say it out loud and actually perform it and then get an audience reaction. So you are a playwright now.
Yeah. And it gives you a kind of a taste, I think too, of the, what kind of the reality is of it and what the benefit is of it. Cause you know, it's easy in almost any artistic thing to just go have this really idealistic portrait. Like, I'm a playwright. I've got this image in my head. I'm going to write it down, and then it's going to be produced perfectly the exact way I imagine it. And everybody's going to love it because everybody sees the things the same way I do.
Right, because everyone's in my head.
Because everybody knows how much of a genius I am. But you got to face the reality. My thing isn't perfect. And I know most playwrights, I'm sure, don't think that their thing is perfect. But
no, they're always... It's
more harsh than anybody else.
It's like, never finished sometimes. You know, well, you're just never finished.
You got to know when to let it go, but... You know, but it also gives you the thing of, well, I'm hearing this read by somebody, and they're laughing, and the audience is laughing, and it's, you know, it's really been a great experience, and I'd like to continue writing for the stage in the future for other things.
Cool. When I knew that playwriting was for me was the very first play, and I sat in the back of a theater, and I sat on the floor, because it was kind of like this, where there were just chairs like that, and I was hearing the audience reaction, and it was just like, oh, that's cool. I love it. And I love laughter, but then I also love that when no one is moving, when it's just dead silence, so they're not shifting and they're not thinking.
Well, that, in my opinion, when you can make your audience cry, I think is more of, a payoff than making them laugh. Because, you know, if a guy walks in a clown suit, you laugh.
Somebody's going to laugh.
Somebody's going to laugh just because, you know, there's comedy. And comedy is, you know, great. I wrote one. I love it. But to make somebody cry, they have to be emotionally invested in it. They have to take it seriously. They have to understand the circumstances. And that, in my opinion, is much more audience involvement than just laughter.
There you go. There's your next play. You have to think about think about that drama and how they're going to cry.
The sequel.
The sequel, yes. Where Jerry, Eddie is still sitting there, you know.
And Sophocles visits him.
That's right. All right, awesome. Thank you very much, Aaron. I can't wait to... I think that...
It's going to be great.
I think it is going to be great. I think your actors are... we chose well, and they...
We chose very well. I'm very, very proud of them.
And they're... yeah, me too. They've worked their butts off this morning, so it's all going to be good.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
So, after our talk, we went right into the Playworks performance, where All's Well That Pays Well was the very last play to be performed. So, we had to sit through all the other plays... And top of that, some short film winners and a Reader's Theater performance before getting to Aaron's play. And I have to say, it rocked the house. The audience loved it. There was laughter from beginning to end. It was awesome. And I was so pleased, so happy for Aaron. He was thrilled. And it just couldn't have gone better. Just what a great experience. And that's where we're going to end. That's it. That's all. Take care, my friends. Take care.